the history of Dungeons and Dragons. The art of pretend has been around for thousands of years, from ancient Chinese opera to Greek theater to modern Hollywood and everything in between. But for most people, the pastime of make-believe is left behind after leaving childhood, becoming only observers as others pretend to be someone they're not. For many, they remain transient spectators of fantastical adventures and epic journeys through books, films, or video games, with no inclination towards being a part of such tales. For a growing number of people, however, they have decided to enter a world of make-believe action and adventure themselves, becoming essential parts of incredible tales and unforgettable moments. These people are role players. Tabletop role-playing games cover every genre of fiction and non-fiction you can imagine, and for decades, players have joined together around tables around the world to create their own versions of stories many of us love so much. Dungeons & Dragons is without a doubt the most popular RPG, and one most people have heard of, but not as many know the whole history of its development over the years. Entire books can and have been written covering the history of the game since 1974, so this will be a bit of a truncated summary. Dungeons & Dragons' formation as a game is rooted in another type of tabletop game known as war games. Wargaming typically involves an armed conflict between two opposing sides, played out on a simulated battlefield, using miniature figures to represent troops or collections of troops. Gary Gygax, a name you might be familiar with, was a big fan of wargaming and helped form the International Federation of Wargaming in 1967, a group dedicated to promoting interest in wargames and to help form local groups. The following year, Gygax rented out a hall in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, where he lived to hold the first Lake Geneva War Games Convention, attended by about 100 people. This convention is now known just as Gen Con, caters to all sorts of gamers instead of just war gamers, and pulls in more than 60,000 attendees every year. Gary Gygax met a fellow war gamer, Dave Arneson, at the second Gen Con in 1970, and the two hit it off. Both had had a history of customizing war games and coming up with new rules, a trait that would soon lead to an entire new genre of game. In late 1970, Gygax lost his job and turned to gaming in hopes of making a living, which eventually led to him publishing a medieval war game named Chainmail that he and a friend, Jeff Perrin, had created. Chainmail is generally considered the direct predecessor to D&D in many ways, partly due to various rule systems involved, but also largely due to the presence of a supplement to turn Chainmail into a fantasy war game, which makes it the first commercially available fantasy war game. The supplement, written by Gygax, was heavily inspired by the works of Tolkien and Howard, and includes rules for playing as dwarves, hobbits, elves, wizards, and more. It includes well-known spells such as Protection from Evil, Haste, Polymorph, Cloud Kill, Fireball, and others. It discusses plenty of different monsters, such as trolls, orcs, goblins, wights, and balrogs, and includes rules for magical weapons. The war game company that Gygax did some work for, Gwydion Games, considered Chainmail to be relatively successful, selling 100 copies a month. This brings us back to Dave Arneson, who for several years had been playing a modified war game created by David Wesley named Brownstein that set the stone in a lot of ways for the development of RPGs. Brownstein featured a referee judging over a number of players, and the implementation of several non-military roles, such as a player controlling the mayor of the town or the university chancellor. While the overall goal was still winning a war, it allowed players to begin playing a role within a story. Brownstein was never published, and rules would often have to be created on the spot as players did unexpected actions. Arneson, much like Gygax, was a big fan of fantasy works such as Lord of the Rings, and would eventually start playing Brownstein in an alternate fantasy setting that he called Blackmoor. Rather than just focusing on war, and having the players play as single characters rather than controlling armies, Arneson would devise scenarios in which his players would quest for magic items and gold, escort caravans, and delve into the dungeons beneath Castle Blackmoor. Arneson initially used the fantasy material and rules of chainmail, but soon developed his own rule set, involving hit points, armor class, and character development. While there is some disagreement on how much chainmail played a part in the development of Blackmoor, both games form the foundation of D&D. Blackmoor deviates somewhat from the normal high fantasy of D&D, as it involved a number of science fiction elements and pieces of technology, concepts mostly left behind nowadays in D&D. In 1972, Arneson visited Lake Geneva and ran a game of Blackmoor for a group that included Gygax, who fell in love with the concept and saw its potential. Arneson mailed 18 handwritten pages of info about Blackmoor to Gygax, who expanded on them until he had a 50-page document for a new game. He began testing the game with his children, naming the campaign Castle Greyhawk. Others soon joined the game, and Gygax sent out the rule set to other wargamers to try it out. Arneson and Gygax continued to correspond to share details about their campaigns and flesh out the rules, with Gygax wanting to get the game published as soon as possible, since there were now similar games in the works. Gygax's revision of the rules numbered 150 pages, and Gwydion Games rejected to publish it since it was too large for them. So Gygax then went to the largest wargaming company, Avalon Hill. The idea of role-playing was a little too fresh for Avalon Hill, who also passed on it. Arneson couldn't afford to help fund any part of the venture, so ultimately he was left behind as Gygax looked to self-publish. Gygax, along with two gaming acquaintances, formed a new company called Tactical Studies Rules, which would later become known as TSR Inc. Between the three of them, they were able to finally publish Dungeons & Dragons, released in January of 1974, as a box set containing three books, one for Men and Magic, one for Monsters and Treasure, and one for the Underworld and Wilderness Adventures. 1,000 copies were put together in Gygax's home, and the run sold out in 11 months, selling for $10 each, about $50 in today's money. The first set of Dungeons & Dragons is based on chainmail, and assumes the reader has played it before, using its measurement and combat systems. An optional combat system included would later become the primary combat system, however. The original D&D included concepts such as ability scores, character classes such as Fighting Man, Magic User, and Cleric, races such as Human, Dwarf, and Elf, and of course, both Dungeons and Dragons, along with a host of other monsters. A groundbreaking game, things were looking pretty good for TSR, but in January of 1975, one of the founders, Don Kay, suffered a heart attack and passed away. His one-third share of the company wasn't specifically mentioned in his will, so it was left to his wife, who had no interest in gaming and wanted nothing to do with the company. By this point, the company was being run out of Gygax's basement, and they reorganized it into a corporation. The other two founders needed to buy out the shares owned by Kay's wife, but lacked the funds to do so, so they turned to Brian Bloom's father. With Bloom's father owning 200 shares now, and Bloom himself owning 240, Gygax and his 150 shares became a minority shareholder of the company he had recently founded. The gaming development continued, however, with Gygax writing a number of supplements for D&D, a Wild West-themed RPG called Boot Hill, and the creation of a fantasy gaming periodical called The Dragon. Dave Arneson would actually be hired by TSR as part of the creative staff, but would only stay with the company for 10 months. Dungeons & Dragons was a success, but it was still far too esoteric for a widespread audience to embrace, due to its strong roots in the wargaming scene. The Greyhawk supplement, written in 1975, based around Gygax's homebrew campaign, was a very important step in the right direction, adding a new combat system, the thief and paladin classes, rules for weapons with varying damages, new spells, treasure, and many more now iconic monsters. In 1977, an outside writer named J. Eric Holmes came to TSR with the offer of writing an introductory book for Dungeons & Dragons to encourage more people to try out the game. TSR hired him, and he incorporated elements from the original D&D game, as well as the Greyhawk supplement and other supplements, producing the Dungeons & Dragons basic set. The idea of a basic set with rules for the first few levels and everything you and a group need to get started would carry on to this day. That same year, however, TSR released a brand new edition of D&D, not specifically compatible with the basic set they just released, called Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. AD&D would be the start of a series of Dungeons & Dragons editions leading up to the modern 5th edition, and would depart from the basic set due to its extensive set of rules. The basic set would be expanded upon and revised over the years as a simpler version of D&D, accompanied by its own continuation called the Expert Set. This line of editions was eventually cut off in 1995, but many people still enjoy these versions, now commonly referred to as D&D BX. And there is a whole movement of RPGs called the Old School Renaissance, or OSR, that draws inspiration from these games. Mostly, though, if you're talking about D&D, you're talking about Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. AD&D was distinct enough from previous versions of D&D that Gygax refused to pay Dave Arneson any royalties on the products, claiming that it was a new product entirely. Arneson sued the company, leading to a settlement which gave him a 2.5% royalty on all AD&D products. A pretty nice payout, as it turns out. Rather than the looser, lighter tone of the basic set written by Holmes, which encouraged improvisation, AD&D was written with a very tight structure in mind, with rules for many different situations and scenarios, so that the rulebooks could be used during tournament play. AD&D was a harsher game than later editions, but it captured all of the magic of role-playing, and would be the framework that Dungeons & Dragons would continue to build off of. All of the rules were spread across three books, now a familiar concept: the Monster Manual, the Player's Handbook, and the Dungeon Master's Guide. AD&D would be the principal D&D edition for a decade, with many, many supplements and adventures being written for it. Most of what we associate with D&D would come out of this period, either from Gygax or from other writers working for TSR. By 1980, TSR was pulling in $8.5 million a year through D&D sales, and by 1982, that number had jumped up to $16 million. D&D had become a nationwide phenomenon, not necessarily through player numbers, but definitely in public awareness. Much of Dungeons & Dragons' attention throughout the 80s was negative, however, due to circumstances around a couple of deaths and a satanic panic pointed at D&D. In 1979, James Dallas Egbert III disappeared from his dormitory at Michigan State University after leaving a suicide note. His parents hired a private investigator to find him, who theorized that his disappearance was related to him playing D&D, a game that the investigator knew little about. The media latched on to this, and ultimately it became the central point of his story within the public conscience, further fictionalized in the novel Mazes and Monsters, and the film based on the novel starring Tom Hanks. In 1982, the son of a woman named Patricia Pulling shot himself in the chest, and Patricia blamed his suicide on Dungeons & Dragons, a game he was involved with. She filed a wrongful death lawsuit against his school principal because he allowed the game to be played on school grounds, and she believes a curse that had been placed on her son's character drove him to suicide. She also filed a lawsuit against TSR, but neither were successful. In 1983, she formed a public advocacy group, BAD, Bothered About Dungeons & Dragons, spreading information that D&D promoted devil worship and suicide. Although nowadays D&D is in a much better place in the public's perception, the idea that it promoted Satanism and witchcraft was wide-reaching throughout the 80s and 90s. This mindset even spread to Gary Gygax's church, where the congregation was already uneasy about Gygax's excessive smoking and drinking, leading him and his wife to break away. Although Gygax was making a very sizable sum from TSR, his life would begin to spiral out of control as he began excessively drinking, smoking marijuana and cocaine, and having a number of extramarital affairs. Additionally, Brian Bloom's brother bought out their father's share of the company, and the two brothers grew increasingly at odds with Gygax about managing the company. In 1983, Gygax divorced from his wife and was made the president of the new branch of TSR, TSR Entertainment Inc. He was sent to Hollywood by the Bloom brothers to develop television shows and movies based on TSR properties, principally D&D. This led to the creation of a Dungeons & Dragons animated series on CBS, a co-production with Marvel Productions, which lasted for 3 seasons. Gygax, now newly single and living it up in Hollywood, left day-to-day operations at TSR to the Bloom brothers, rented a mansion, began doing even more cocaine, and dated a number of young starlets and models. His primary business focus at this time was getting a D&D feature film made, and after months of negotiations, managed to get Orson Welles to agree to star. Unfortunately, around this time, he received word from TSR that they were having severe financial difficulties, and the Blooms were looking to sell the company for $6 million, despite grossing $30 million a year. Apparently, it was barely breaking even, and was $1.5 million in debt. Gygax investigated, and blamed Kevin Bloom entirely, due to excessive inventory, overstaffing, too many company cars, and overseeing some questionable and expensive projects, including dredging up a 19th century shipwreck. The other directors on the board believed the company needed to be sold, but Gygax still believed in it. He purchased more stocks in TSR, giving him over 50% control, and appointed himself president and CEO. He wrote a novel set in the Greyhawk setting, wrote a supplement for AD&D called Unearthed Arcana, worked with Dave Arneson again to publish a number of Blackmoor modules, and hired a new company manager. Thanks to Gygax's swift actions, he had saved TSR from disaster, but the company manager he had hired, Lorraine Williams, ended up purchasing all of the Bloom Brothers' shares, making her the majority shareholder. She appointed herself the new president and CEO, and basically forced Gygax out of the company, shelving all of his projects. In 1986, Gygax resigned from the company after a failed lawsuit in which he lost the rights to most of his work, including Greyhawk and most of his popular characters. Although Gygax would go on to help form another gaming company, and would continue to work on games, his professional connection to D&D is more or less severed at this point. Reportedly, Lorraine Williams detested gaming, but TSR would continue to expand and remain successful for a number of years. In 1987, a small team at TSR led by David Cook began working on a new edition of Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, which would take 2 years to complete. AD&D 2nd Edition featured new rules and some new design philosophies. This was the first edition aimed primarily at teenagers instead of adults, and elements such as demons and devils were removed or renamed to curb some of the satanic panic, along with removing things such as the assassin class. The combat system was changed again to introduce the THACO system. Distance units were changed to in-game feet rather than out-of-game inches, and overall a number of improvements were made to streamline play. Much like the first edition, lasting for a decade, AD&D 2nd Edition would be the primary D&D game until 2000. During the early 90s, a number of popular official settings would be released in the form of supplements and modules, including Ravenloft, Dark Sun, and Planescape. Unfortunately, however, by this point, there was some healthy competition from other gaming companies, notably Games Workshop, known primarily for the Warhammer and Warhammer 40,000 franchises, and Wizards of the Coast, which was experiencing a large amount of success with a new card game, Magic the Gathering. By 1996, TSR was going downhill once again, partly due to the growing trend of collectible card games and the decline of RPGs, but also due to the sheer number of supplements that TSR was putting out, meaning that players were hesitant to pick up books about new settings that might only be relevant for a couple of years. In 1997, TSR was left with very little cash on hand, partly due to the cost of producing their collectible dice game, Dragon Dice, which did not sell well. The company had no funds to continue printing new material. A number of staff members were laid off, and the company was $30 million in debt. Lorraine Williams sold the company to Wizards of the Coast, which continued to use the TSR name for D&D products for a few years, but it was time to put out a new edition. By this point, the basic D&D game that had been running alongside AD&D had been discontinued for a number of years, so Wizards decided to drop the word advanced altogether. Dungeons & Dragons 3rd Edition was released in 2000, with the unifying concept of resolving nearly all actions with a d20 and modifiers. Although many elements of the game were streamlined, the combat system was expanded upon, returning to the idea of miniature play on a grid. Characters were no longer limited on class and race combinations. New character options were introduced, including prestige classes only available at higher levels, and feats were introduced. In 2003, Wizards would release a revised edition of 3rd Edition, titled Dungeons & Dragons 3.5, focused on correcting a number of common complaints about 3rd Edition. D&D 3.5 was an incredibly popular game among hobbyists, still played to this day, and inspired the creation of another popular RPG, Pathfinder. But D&D was far from mainstream by this point. Rather than the decades of content allowed for 1st and 2nd Edition, 4th edition D&D would begin development around 2007, and would be released in June of 2008. 4th edition D&D would end up being perhaps the greatest departure in the franchise, altering a large number of rules in order to make the combat far more tactical and more akin to a board game. In an attempt to balance every class in combat, each is given a wide number of powers to use, and a system of healing surges is introduced, allowing every character the ability to heal themselves. Due to the tactical, calculated nature of combat, miniatures and a grid are practically required. Although 4th edition sold well, it received plenty of criticism from players, and is overall not remembered fondly. Again, Wizards of the Coast decided to move on quickly rather than spend many years on an edition, and so in 2012 they announced that D&D Next was under development. Public playtests were performed, with Wizards handing out material for gamers to try themselves and offer feedback on. In 2014, Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition was released, with many remarking it as a great improvement over 4th Edition, primarily due to its ease of play and return to the roots of D&D. Miniatures and grids are no longer required, powers were removed, and many mechanics were simplified. According to Wizards of the Coast, D&D is selling better now than it ever has, and a large part of that is due to the success of 5th edition. That brings us up to the modern day, past the fledgling start of role-playing games and the satanic panic of the 80s. Dungeons & Dragons is a household name, and more people around the world are beginning to play RPGs every day. A wide variety of celebrities openly admit to enjoying D&D. Live plays of campaigns are watched by millions of people, and the game has inspired countless movies, shows, video games, books, parodies, and so on. Thousands of different communities have sprung up based around Dungeons & Dragons, from the widespread fanbase of Critical Role to the subreddit Adventures of Galder that memorializes fallen RPG players and their characters. It's safe to say that Dungeons & Dragons and role-playing games in general are at their highest point in history as far as popularity is concerned, and it's only looking up from here. Whether you enjoy charging in with a greatsword, sneaking around in the shadows, raining down magical fire, or maybe just watching, D&D is one of the most entertaining and educational hobbies available to us, and it's not going anywhere soon.